When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and my loyal Labrador, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Ruff, ruff.
Good dog noises.
What's the background for that?
Yeah, okay, so I forget that you're not like a particularly kind of political person. You're interested in politics. This is
not sort of day-to-day party.
No, this is from the man who bought you Operation Big Dog. This is what Boris Johnson reportedly called one of his staffers, a loyal Labrador.
I see.
What okay. A douchebag. That's our prime minister. Abdul Akani says, Windy, if you ever did your intro and dropped the best friend bit, would Bardi cry or slap you?
I would never put violence upon you, Windy. I love you too much. I'd be a little bit disappointed, but I'd get on with it because I know...
There would be some serious side eye, wouldn't there?
Yeah, we're still best friends.
We're still best friends. Everyone knows we're best friends. Is it not clear from this podcast?
We just need to see each other, Windy. It's been too long.
It'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I want to feel the lithe embrace of a Bardi.
And I want to see. I want to check out your body, see what you've been getting up to.
You're not going to be happy with me, mate. You're going to be so mad. Honestly, I'm not what I used to be.
I'll bring my what are those things that you pinch people to measure fat. I'll bring that along and I'll make some notes.
Is it calipers?
Calipers.
Yeah. Please don't. Although, so what I've decided to do is I've not had any alcohol. So this is confession time. I drank every single day from the 23rd of December through to the 9th of January.
That's a lot.
Which is quite, I wasn't drinking heavily every day, but I was having at least some alcohol every single day. And I allowed myself that. I really like Christmas. I enjoy Christmas time and I enjoy alcohol. So I was like drinking responsibly, but drinking repeatedly. And I have put on a half a stone over Christmas. I'm not proud of that fact, but it's a fact. I've now decided to not drink until my birthday, which is the 3rd of February. So I will, so from last weekend, I've not had anything. I'm craving alcohol, and I will not drink now for a further 2 weeks. And I hope that in that time, I can lose that half a stone, ready to then start the cycle all over again.
Half a stone is quite a lot. I'm going to have a word with you, Windy. I just thought you were just sitting very proud and very puffed up, but now it's all coming out. The truth is coming out.
The truth is out. Yeah, I'm pretty ashamed, not going to lie. What have we been up to this week, boys? I have released a youth podcast, 48 minutes of youthy goodness.
Mainly I cut it down to 48 minutes by sucking out dead air. So it was a good hour, an hour-long improvised rant.
I can only apologise. It felt necessary. It was an emergency podcast after the news about Dylan Markande came to light, and we will definitely talk about that a little later. Nathan released on YouTube, so if you've not seen this, you can go check it out. It's not behind the paywall. It's on our YouTube channel. Just Google YouTube, The Extra Inch. Inverted wingbacks video, Nathan.
Google YouTube. Yeah.
God. Why am I so old now? I hate how old I am.
So it's like I would say I'd say that to my dad. Just Google.
Google
YouTube.
Open your YouTube app.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Did an inverted wingbacks video. Did it with screenshots so I could get it onto YouTube, and I'm pretty happy with how that went. That might be something that I do again in the future, and maybe we develop a bit of a YouTube presence. And I feel like everyone on Spurs Twitter who has the capacity to listen to the extra inch, like we've reached by now. So we need those younger audience members, those YouTubers, those kids. I need more presence on Twitch as well. I reckon that's where the young people are at.
We need to get Bardi Twitch streaming his Football Manager streams. That's what needs to happen next.
I see.
Yeah. What was it you said the other day to me, Wendy? Should we start a TikTok? What am I going to do with a TikTok?
So this is something Flav decided to do for the Fighting Cock, and I thought it was a really good idea. And I was just
running scared, that's why.
No,
it looks good.
I'm just borrowing from the goats.
I just can't be bothered to do more video editing than I already
That's
do.
The thing, isn't it, right? We've spread ourselves pretty thin as it is, and it's pretty tiring, but... Yeah, I mean, I'm always open to new ideas.
Do some vlogs. I'll do some vlogs live in the football pitch from the stands. That would be great.
Speaking of Flav and the Fighting Cock, I did a podcast with Flav and Spooky, which is a podcast they do for their Patreons. And they invited me on and kindly let me put it out on our Patreon. So that went live too. That was about social media. I think it was a pretty good listen. I think we were all kind of quite open and honest about social media in a way that we haven't been on podcasts previously. So I hope the Patreons enjoyed that. And Nathan's putting together a scouting spreadsheet currently. Do you want to talk a little about that, Nathan, or should we do that later?
Okay, let's come back to it later.
Yeah, in the transfer chit chat.
Okay.
Okay. So let's do Chelsea because we haven't got a second game to talk about. And let's start where we always start. The team selection. OMFG. That was my reaction when I saw the team. I thought Bardi is going to be absolutely furious at this. I remember Bardi's fury when Maurizio Pochettino picked Federico Fazio in an important cup match. And Bardi never let him forget that, or never let anyone who listened to him speak about it forget that moment. Did you have a similar reaction to the Gallini selection, Bardi?
No, which is strange. Maybe that's just my pro-Conte stance that I have at the moment. But the Fazio one was Arsenal won a run of bad results. And we had them at home. They were worried. And then Poch put Fazio in the defence. And I think it was Flamini absolutely destroyed him twice and we lost. So, yeah, that turned into like a never forget. That I never forgave Poch for that. But this is a little bit different. We were 2-0 down already. I can understand some of the decisions, but resting Hugo was a bizarre one. I know we need to have a proper look at Gallini, and this was an opportunity to do that, but it was a mistake.
Do we need to have a proper look at Gallini? I'm not sure I need to have a proper look. I think I've seen all I need to see of Gallini.
I mean, I did find myself in a strange place on Wednesday night defending a goalkeeper that I don't think is any good. But I do think he became a scapegoat and he became something that we could just blame everything on him. And I don't think so. I think there was plenty of blame to go to Conte for this and plenty of blame to go on our outfield players. It wasn't we played Gallini and lost. It wasn't Michel Vorm letting in two goals slide underneath him or a son at a left back thing. Gallini could have been better and should have been better, but we didn't lose that game because of him. And then I ended up feeling like I had to defend him more. And then the more people came after me, the more I dug in, which is just what I always do.
Bardi cycle.
It's the Bardi cycle, yeah. We didn't lose that game because of Gallini, but we definitely stopped ourselves having any chance of winning it because of Gallini. And I don't blame Gallini for that. I absolutely blame Conte for that. It was a mad decision to play him. He's so significantly worse than Lloris that it's absurd. And I see what you're saying, Bardi. It was 2-0. But what you're saying essentially is it was 2-0 down. He's written the game off. But I don't buy that because he played Harry Kane.
Yeah, because otherwise you've got nothing to play with. But the goal that we conceded, Lloris wouldn't have come for that cross. We know he's a bit tentative with coming to crosses. He would have stayed on his line and perhaps he would have caught it, would have plopped into his hands or maybe not. I think we do need to have a look at Gallini. If the Lloris contract problem is as complicated as we think it is, then we need to have alternatives in place. God. This is probably not the game to do it, but we need to know if he can cut it. And I thought he did okay. Other than that one goal, I thought he did all right. He made some saves, which is, I don't think he's ever done in his career. And he was okay with his feet.
Okay.
He was better with his feet than he would have been. There were a couple of moments. But also he threw the ball in the back of his own net, as he has done throughout his career. And we're very, very bad at scouting and signing goalkeepers as a club. Mm. Except we stumbled into one of the best keepers in the world for a decade, which was fortunate.
So alongside Gallini, I think we've made it clear, at least I've made it clear, I thought that was a horrific team selection because of Gallini. But also, Nathan, the choice of playing the same back three that had struggled to progress the ball in the first leg, what did you make of that one?
I don't know. It's pretty weird. I mean, like I said in the last episode, once I knew Dier and Romero were out, I knew that we'd lost, right? But I didn't think, obviously we have to play our other centre-backs as a result of that, but we have to play the exact back three that completely lost us the first half of the first leg. I don't understand that decision at all, to be honest. I think that's very weird. Obviously, we were going to tweak exactly how that works, and then maybe, the use of Gallini's feet as a fourth player and build up and build from an even deeper position. But I don't know why we have to, because we demonstrated the ability to switch to a back four when we needed to. I don't understand how, because even if you think it's a double bluff, he won't be expecting us to do exactly what lost us the first game. It's Tuchel can always just switch back to a very similar setup of how he played the first leg. So, I don't know. It's weird. And I think that, if you're playing Gallini and you're playing, two out of three centre-backs who are uncomfortable in the ball in a very ball-playing setup, you've lost the game against a good side. At which point, why play Harry Kane? We may as well have just sent the kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely agree. And I would add to that as well. I tweeted from the Extra Inch straight after the game last week that we should play Sessegnon at left wing back in case we need to switch to a 4-4-2 again or a back four, because then you can play Ben Davis at left back and you can play Sessegnon at left wing. And what Conte did was select Matt Doherty at left wing back and still switch to a back four. So Matt Doherty was playing left wing for Tottenham Hotspur for a large portion of this game, which was absolutely insane. I mean, he must have thought that he could end up playing a 4-4-2 or a 4-2-3-1 system at some point in this game. So the selection of Doherty seemed just bizarre to me.
I mean, I think we saw Reguilón would have probably missed the Arsenal game, so he didn't want to play Sessegnon for another 90 minutes with that game in mind. I think against Lukaku, I think it was important to have three centre-backs there. I think they were able to cover each other quite well. I thought they handled Lukaku pretty well. And it's one of those that over two games, I don't think Chelsea caused us that many problems. Our problems were all our own making. And it was like Jonah Lomu against the Underwoods at the 95 Rugby World Cup. They just put out their hand and just palmed us away, and we were unable to do anything. And there was just a golfing class in just game management between the two teams. I thought Chelsea's midfield was great, and I know, Windy, you always think I'd do anything to big up Jorginho.
You do.
Because I do think he's a fabulous player, but also I think Kovacic is a fabulous player. Mount is a pretty good player as well. And I just think Chelsea were better at what they needed to do. And we saw against Man City, Chelsea are a team, they just don't make mistakes, and they get beaten by either another team doing something incredible, like De Bruyne just whipping it in. And for us, they just didn't make mistakes, and they just let us make three mistakes. And that was the difference between us. But it's that level of quality that they're just able to sit back and not make mistakes. Rudiger is an incredible defender. And every time you watch him live, that guy, the way he moves and the way he covers the ground, and he's got a little bit of everything. You can see why he's not signing a contract, because he can walk into most teams in the world and make a lot of money.
He uses the ball so well as well. I mean, he hasn't got vision that you would say is unusual for a centre back, but his crispness of pass, the weight of pass, is always spot on, and his decision making is always spot on as well. He's just a really, really all round competent player. He's so good.
Yeah, and then alongside him on the right hand side, you've got Azpilicueta. Then when things get a little bit dodgy, they bring in Thiago Silva to kind of chill things out. and put Rudiger to the side of him. It's they're a very strong defensive unit, and that's all they needed to be over these 180 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I just thought we lacked a little bit of something. And if the funny thing is, without VAR, we might have won that game. You know, but we did lack something in the final third, the final touch, the final pass, a little bit of vision, and that's the sad thing, that it was there for us, but we were just unable to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with your analysis that Chelsea just had us at arm's length for the whole game. Essentially, they were playing the second half basically in second gear. I just felt like they could step it up if they needed to. If we were to score, or if let's say one of those VAR decisions went our way, then Chelsea had more than enough in the tank to just sort of turn it on again and come back stronger. They were conserving energy by that point, I felt. So it was really disappointing, but I definitely think Conte has himself to blame. And actually, it's something that I think Nima said to us in the pod we did with him, that Conte struggles when he has to play two matches a week. Is that right? I mean, that's one of the reasons he said that he's been poor in the Champions League to date.
Possibly.
Sure. I mean, he's kind of a first 11 guy. Yeah, he's not really a squad manager.
Hmm.
And he prioritises the league. And as I sort of went into in the video that I did a couple of weeks ago, like, he can be prepared for. So I think all those things in combination, prioritisation of the league, sort of mixed squad management, and a sort of everyone knows exactly how he's going to play, pretty much, combined to make him sort of not have the greatest record in cup competitions, but be so consistent in the league every year at various clubs.
Mm. Paul Nelson emailed, and he made a point that that we've kind of covered already, that an elite manager shouldn't make the same mistakes twice in one week against the same team and further compound it by playing the suspect reserve goalkeeper. And yeah, I mean, I have to agree with that. We also got an email from MikeGav84, who said, it might have been on our Discord, actually. Is it fair to say that losing to Chelsea 3-0 and 2 EFL games isn't a bad result given our injuries, the gulf in squad quality and spending, and some obvious selection and tactical mistakes? I mean, it's never good to lose 3-0 to Chelsea across two matches, is it? That's the thing. I mean, it's not an absolute disaster. It's not time to sort of rip up everything and start again, or think that we should be utterly pessimistic about the future. It's just that we had real crucial injuries that impacted on our ability to play the system we want to play, which resulted in Chelsea having an advantage over us during that time. But I would say that Conte does need to learn from that second leg in particular about the decision-making process. And I would also, I do think as well, if we see that same backline come out again when Dier or Romero are absent, I would be concerned, because, I mean, I agree that he's got no choice but to play some of the players that, you know, aren't Dier and Romero, of course. But he doesn't have to play the back three. He could play a back four, or he could do something a bit more radical, like play Emerson Royale at right-sided centre-back, or Huibier even, who hasn't played centre-back, but I think he could probably do a fine job there. Certainly in possession, he'd be a vast improvement. So there's more he could have tinkered with, I think.
I mean, I hold pretty much all of these critiques and frustrations, but I'm just generally not especially concerned. Like, there's a lot of panic and frustration in the Spurs fan base right now, for multiple reasons, obviously, like the Arsenal game. We haven't bought anyone and it's mid-January. The sort of underlying sort of mass anxiety around Conte walking out at any moment. And then, a couple of bad results. But, like, I think we're good. I think we're a good team. And I don't think Conte's in a rush to run away. And I think the squad needs a bit of work, and I think it will get some. And we'll have an opportunity to beat Arsenal some other time. You know, I was frustrated with the selection, was frustrated with the decisions, but we were always going to be the underdog going into Tuchel's Chelsea, and we're playing really well as a team. I think some of the impression is that, like, oh, we beat up some really easy teams and now we come against a good team and maybe we're not so good, but I don't see it that way at all. I'm much less concerned. I think we'll be straight back into form pretty soon, so
I agree.
I'm so happy.
Yeah, Chelsea were the worst. The worst team to get in this draw. I would have preferred to have got Liverpool or Arsenal. I think we could have beaten them. But Chelsea in these cup competitions, they're just good. Then they've got our number. We haven't beaten them since since 2019. Well, we haven't beaten them for many, many years. And I think that was in the League Cup as well when Kane got wiped out by Kepa. But yeah, it happens. Yeah, and it happens a lot against Chelsea. And this is not a sign that it's over for Tottenham and Conte's done and he needs to leave. It's one of these games against a very good, efficient team.
So obviously the Arsenal game was postponed. We kind of thought this might happen. My view is that the Premier League have made a ridiculous rod for their own back here with their rules, which are ill thought through and open to interpretation and
abuse.
And abuse. That's exactly the word I was looking for. And Arsenal have absolutely abused them by, you know, sending players out on loan and then asking for a match to be cancelled because they've got one, maybe two COVID cases.
I mean, the Premier League didn't have the foresight to, like, include in their ruling, like, not including players suspended, you know, is really
or players you've chosen to loan out in the past week.
Yeah. I don't know. There's so much anger about this. I don't know. Like, of course Arsenal have abused the rules. And of course, you know, they're cowards. But I look at the wider picture and see, like, the fact that, like, okay, even if you count a suspension in a player that they just loaned out who was first, you know, who was squad level, the fact that we're in a situation in football that, like, a top six quotation marks team are, like, down to that many players. Yeah, just one COVID case shuts down cities in Australia and New Zealand, and obviously that's not the situation, and China, and that's not the situation that, like, that we're in, you know, in London or whatever. But I don't, like, as a general principle, hate that level of sort of caretaking. Obviously, again, that's not what Arsenal are doing here. They're not taking care. They're making use of a situation, but I just I think that, like, there's such a desperation for there to be so much football played all the time that clubs and players are falling to pieces. And Spurs fans desperately wanted to see a really diminished product. You know, we're missing Dier and Romero. They're missing, you know, half their squads. Yes, of course, you know, that's an opportunity to get a North London derby win and we all want that. But taking a step back, if this was any club other than Arsenal, like, I want to see two teams at their best going at it. And I don't mind waiting a week to see that. And I don't mind, you know, taking care in a pandemic and giving extra, you know, sort of extra care and extra time between games and not running so many tournaments all the time, not running domestic and international tournaments at the same time and running international tournaments every summer so that there's no actual off season in a year. And I don't know, I just of course Arsenal have been dickheads, but the wider picture is, like, this situation is gonna happen.
Nathan, are you saying that on this rare occasion two wrongs have made a right?
No, I wouldn't ever use that phrase because I hate it, but also, no, that's not even appropriate. That's not even applicable.
No, it does work. It does work because the Premier League have made a bad rule and Arsenal have been bad in abusing it, and the right result has happened. I think the thing for me is Spurs fans are so desperate to take the moral high ground here and say, look at these cowards, look at these idiots, as if we wouldn't do exactly the same thing. Of course, Daniel Levy would do exactly the same thing that Arsenal have just done. And you're absolutely deluded if you think otherwise. We would have done the same thing. We would have been applying to postpone this game if we had 12 players and two of them were Matt Doherty and Pierluigi Gallini. We would. So we missed the North London derby anyway. It's been a bit of a depressing weekend from a Spurs perspective because it's something you always look forward to when the fixtures come out at the beginning of the year. Lots of people were excited about going to the game. It's felt like a bit of a downer, but it will happen.
We did save ourselves an incredible amount of banter that had we played them and lost, then it would have been unbearable.
Lost to the kids, yeah.
Yeah, so we did save ourselves from that. I mean, I personally was really looking forward to it, especially after the Chelsea game and the atmosphere and everything else in the crowd. There was some anger. I think a win against Arsenal would have fixes sure. everything pretty much. So that it was an opportunity missed then. Yeah.
I feel sorry for those with tickets, you know, match goers. Of course, I feel sorry for them. And any time a game is cancelled, they have the right to feel angry, I think. But for the most part, I think it's a little overblown. And of course, we want to, like, as Barty's saying, like, we want to bounce back after the Chelsea game. But I think we're fine. I don't think we need to have that sort of insecurity about our quality.
True.
Let's talk about transfers. Quite a lot to talk about. We've got Nathan's spreadsheet to dip into as well. Shall I start? Lion says, why don't our youth players believe?
And why don't they believe, Windy? Why do they keep abandoning us?
It's a good question.
Is it because you don't go to the training ground anymore and inspire them to become legends? Like, when you were there, think about it, Windy. The players you nurtured through to the first team, Harry Winks, Harry Kane, Ryan Mason, Nabil Bentaleb, they're all yours, man. Since you've left, nothing.
You're absolutely right. I can't deny that this is the case. I think maybe my presence just made everything better for our young players.
It's that Windy Coys guy. It's that Windy Coys guy. Let's play better.
So the only time that that's ever happened, when I was acknowledged by youth players, it was by Massimo Luongo. Do you remember him? He went on to play for QPR. He's a good player, actually. And someone brought him over to meet me and said, oh, this is Windy. And he's like, oh, Windy, I follow you on Twitter. And he was really, really nice. And he then said, he turned around to one of his teammates, I won't name him, and said...
You named him before. You told us this story before. You named him before. It was off the podcast. Maybe it was off the podcast.
Name him, coward. Name him.
I won't name him. He said, this is Windy. And that player turned to me and kissed his teeth at me because apparently I'd given him a bad review on my blog. And he wasn't very impressed. So I wasn't... I was public enemy number one with him. But anyway, I don't think anyone knows who I am other than Massimo Luongo now.
You've been accused by, like... players' parents of like working with agents and all kinds of like nefarious, awful
that did happen. Things. That did happen. And the club also once, I remember me and Bancroft Spurs were, it was at the old Spurs Lodge training ground. We were watching a game and it would have been Mason and Obika playing up front at that time. And club officials had a close eye on me and Bancroft. I think they thought that we were like either agents or involved in like some sort of betting. So occasionally academy matches, you could bet on academy matches from abroad normally. And so you'd see people on the phone and it would be like, they'd be making a call to a foreign country saying, bet X amount on so-and-so winning, because the information was so hard to get that you'd be able to get one over on the bookies. And I think that was a suspicion that we were involved in some sort of criminal betting activity.
Just absolute nerds.
Just absolute weirdos watching 16, 17, 18-year-olds run around on a Saturday morning at 11 o'clock, yeah.
You should have become an agent, Windy Coy's football agent. It would have been great. You had a whole new, different life, Windy. You could have been living in...
Can you imagine it, though? I mean, I just...
Head to toe and bling, you'd be doing well.
No, I'm not the right character for that, for sure.
Imagine in negotiations with Daniel Levy.
Yeah, can you imagine that? Seriously, just cave, wouldn't I? So why don't our youth players believe? Why is Dylan Markande joining Blackburn Rovers for a reported £500,000? Well, the reason he's joining Blackburn Rovers for such a low fee is that he has a matter of months remaining on his contract. His contract ends presumably at the end of June, certainly this summer. And the reason his contract ends at the end of June is because we couldn't tie him down to another contract. And the reason we couldn't tie him down to another contract is, I can only assume, because he felt he'd be better off elsewhere. And I can't disagree with that decision that he and his family and his agency have made. He absolutely will be better off at Blackburn Rovers. He's going to a Championship club who are third in the league, who could well get promoted back to the Premier League. If he can establish himself in the team between now and the end of the season, then he could be a starter in the Premier League next year. I wrote a blog about this, a very long blog, at the weekend. I'm really disappointed that Spurs have got this recurring issue with getting players to commit to contracts. I think they need to work out what they are doing in terms of their pathways for young players. But also, I do think, and I wrote that from the perspective of the money, the loss of income, because Markande is worth a lot more than £500,000. You know, if Markande had another 3 years in his contract, we would not be entertaining a bid less than 10 million. We just wouldn't. You know, this is...
10 million?
Yeah. This is a 20-year-old who is one of the best players in the Premier League 2 this year. Why would we need to sell for anything less than 10 million if he was tied down to a contract? The other part of it, and I think the money is the part that connects with people who aren't bothered about putting academy players in the first team. But the other part of it is a shame that, you know, we've spent 5 years developing this player and we've made him a good player and he's managed to get 15 minutes in our first team. I do think that is a damn shame.
Marcus Edwards is about to move for a similar sum.
Yeah, good for him.
To the one you're suggesting, I mean, not to the 500,000.
Yeah, I'm really pleased for Marcus Edwards. I'm pleased that he went abroad and has found a career. In retrospect, he should have gone 2-3 years earlier. That's the, you know, that, and this is why Markande and others will leave Spurs, because they've seen players leave and do well. Madueke is another obvious example. There are players who've left and not done so well, but they left. The point is they left because they didn't see a pathway at Spurs and they saw opportunities elsewhere. Buddy.
But is the fact that he's gone to Blackburn perhaps a sign that he's not as good? Because I know Markande through his numbers that we talk about every now and then, and his 15-minute cameo. He hasn't gone to Dortmund. He hasn't gone to a top European team. He's gone to Blackburn Rovers. To be honest with you, I didn't know they were third in the league. I don't often go look that far down the table. But it's the fact that he's gone to Blackburn, he's not that good, or there are doubts. And the other thing is, it's also that Blackburn must have offered more money, no? Or is it just the fact that they've offered him a route into the first team?
I would imagine he'll be earning more at Blackburn than he does at Spurs now. Whether we offered him more money, I don't know. But let's imagine that they offered the same amount of money. It's still the correct decision for him to go to Blackburn because of the opportunity it offers him to actually have men's first team minutes. I mean, he's wasted a year in the Premier League 2 for us. The Premier League 2 is fine for what it is. For some players, it's fine, but he's too good for that level. I mean, Markande and Clark and Harvey White and Niall John are simply all too good for that level, to the extent where our team's really good because of those four. And it was not good when we didn't have those four playing in it. White and Clark have got significant experience of playing in the league at other clubs, and they should be playing for league clubs now rather than in the Premier League too. It's a bit of a waste of time, to be honest. Whether the Blackburn move shows that he's not good enough is an interesting question, buddy. And this is something that people say quite a lot. Well, you know, it shows something that Blackburn are the ones interested in him. And my response to that is twofold. It's firstly, Blackburn have got some good players. So Ben Brereton-Diaz is a player I rate really, really highly and would be happy if he was in Spurs' squad, to be honest. I think he's an excellent player. And I think there are a lot of good players in the Championship. And I think a player of Markande's level is good enough to be a Premier League squad player. But it's more about... So if we're expecting young players to be as good or better than their respective counterparts in the first team, then we're never going to bring any of them through because they're just not going to be without opportunity. Unless, you know, they're Oliver Skip and they have an outstanding loan move and they play in a position where there's a perceived weakness, then they'll get their minutes. But what you have to do with young players is you have to look at the ceiling. You have to appreciate that they're not a finished article. They're going to improve. So, and we did that with Skip. We gave him appearances when he was younger and he wasn't as good as the players around him, but we saw his ceiling. We saw the potential. We gave him games when he wasn't necessarily performing his best and he wasn't better than the alternatives, but we saw this is the right way to give him a bit of experience to help him on his way to become what he now has become. And I think we should have been doing that with Markande over the last 18 months. And I'm not saying play him in the Premier League game. Of course I'm not. I'm saying we've had Europa Conference League matches against rubbish. And the reason Spurs presumably didn't play him is because he hadn't signed a contract. And I think that is very stubborn of Spurs. And I think it's unfortunate that it's panned out this way because I genuinely think we've lost millions on this player. But it's not just that. It's about the many millions we'll lose in the future because other players will see the exact same thing as Markande and Sirkin before him. You know, Sirkin last season left for Sunderland because of the same reason. Lewis Binks the season before left and is now playing in the Bologna first team for the same reason. Keenan Bennett and Rio Griffiths left for the same reason. Madueke left for the same reason. There's countless players that have left because they don't see a pathway. And this is a problem that Spurs need to fix because otherwise, what's the point?
Or you just offer them enough money to keep them there.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's what Chelsea do, to be honest. I think Chelsea pay a lot higher youth team wages because they don't play for Chelsea. They go out on loan. But it entices them to stay around. And then Chelsea have someone like Conor Gallagher at their disposal next season now. Any thoughts, Nathan?
I don't know. Where a player goes is not really indicative of much because the market is like a mess all the time and clubs are bad analysing player quality. We nearly sold Gareth Bale for like 5 million to, was it Blackburn or something?
Is it Birmingham?
Nottingham Forest.
Nottingham Forest, yeah, that's right.
Forest. Yeah. Yeah, you know, and this kind of stuff happens all the time. So I don't know, like, the thing is, so Kyle Walker-Peters and Marcus Edwards are two really talented players who have significant defensive holes in their game, and for that reason would never and will never be at Champions League clubs, right? And there are other players who, like, maybe had the capacity for that, but, like, their lack of development means they didn't turn into the player that they could have been. And maybe you feel that's the case for Edwards and Walker-Peters. If they'd have stayed around at Spurs and got game time, they'd have developed defensively. I'm less convinced of that personally, but I still think that, like, you can, it's worthwhile developing players, as you're saying, to turn a sum on them, and to develop, which is sort of the wider the question here, to develop a culture of player development, so that the best players in our academy, you know, Noni Madueke, want to stay at Spurs because they believe that there's a path through. And it's not like there's no path through, because there is Kane and Winks and Skip, and that's worthwhile having there. I don't know how well that compares or doesn't compare to sort of other teams in similar positions to us, but...
In a way, I don't think it matters what other clubs are doing, and it's more about what we're doing, because other clubs might not have as many prospects as us, or as good an academy as us, or as good coaching as us, and I think people do look at Kane and Winks and Skip and say, that's great, that's enough, and I look at it and say, that's great, let's have more. And we could have more because we've got the talent to have more. And I think Walker-Peters is a really interesting case because, I mean, I agree that his defensive output is not where it should be for an elite Premier League player. But I think Walker-Peters is a really good Premier League player. And I think his progressive passing and dribble numbers this year have been up there with the best in the division in terms of fullbacks. So there's like a trade-off there. And what we have to remember is that we've spent £60 million trying to replace Kyle Walker. So we've bought Aurier, and then we've bought Doherty, and then we've bought Emerson Royal. And do we truly believe that any of them are levels above Kyle Walker-Peters? Maybe they're a bit above. Are they £60 million above? And I think this is the thing we need to factor into our decision-making around transfers. Do we have an equivalent academy player who, with a bit of time, a bit of patience, or the right loan, can become as good as the next possible target? Or grow and become a better player, like sort of with Harry Kane and Harry Winks, to be fair to him as well.
For the critique I gave of Kyle Walker-Peters, he is a better player than Matt Doherty.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He would be better in the squads than Matt Doherty.
We did loan Kyle Walker as well before. Mm. He was a player with defensive issues, and he had a good loan at Villa. It was. I do think it's funny, though, that we've changed from a club where it's like someone like Simon Dawkins was born at Tottenham, lived all his life at Tottenham, and then died at Tottenham. He left us when he was 29, and these days we can't keep hold of a youngster until they leave at 18, 19. And who's it? Anton Walks. Who was the Greek chap as well? He was around for ages.
Anthony Georgiou, yeah, he stuck around until he's sort of, I think he was 24 when he left Georgiou.
Yeah, it's just like,
I mean, that is another failure in our development system, to be honest, in the same way.
Carter Vickers
still at the club. and again, we will sell Carter Vickers for a fee below what he's worth. He's playing really well at Celtic, but he doesn't have that much longer on his contract. If we'd sold at the right time, and had him tied down to a contract, we could have got a lot more money for him. And that's the sort of thing that I'm most frustrated about, because I completely understand that the vast, vast majority of our academy players are never going to play for Tottenham. Rightly or wrongly, they're just not. So let's instead focus on making them valuable so that we can then use that income, that revenue, to buy better first team players. That said, I do think Markande could have added something. I really do.
I'd like you to one day to do a podcast with Simon Dawkins, Windy, because I think you spoke about him every week for like 5 years on your youth and loan report on the Fighting Cock.
When he was with San Jose Earthquakes.
That's the one. What a guy. I'd love to find out a little bit more about him.
So I've started doing this piece of research that I'm going to put on my blog. I'm going back 10 years. I might go back a little bit further, looking at every academy intake. And I've not quite decided on the parameters I'm going to use yet, but I'm thinking of looking at the number of minutes they played at Spurs, the number of minutes they played on loan while at Spurs, how much they were sold for, and where they've got on to play. And it's even the bit of research I've done so far, it's so fascinating to see where some of our players end up. There are players playing now who I just assumed had given up on football, and actually they've either they have found their way at a league club or a conference club, or primarily, to be honest, a non-league club. Even the worst players from our academy are solid non-league footballers, which I think is really interesting. And there's certainly some quirks of this research, which I'm looking forward to sort of writing about.
Get a camera, go out and video them and talk to them, Windy. I would watch that.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So let's talk about first team signings. Sheck says, say Newcastle come in with a bid for Lucas. At what cost do you draw the line saying it's too low to sell? Is 20 million enough? 15, 25, more? God, Nathan, can you imagine the uproar if we sold Lucas right now?
I don't think I can conceive of the reaction. How much for Lucas right now? Okay, so he's 29. We paid 25 million for him. He is a player in form. But it's Newcastle, and we're only accepting considerable overpays from Newcastle, right? We're not interested in selling them. They have the money, so if they're buying, they're buying heavy, right? So 30, I'd take 30 for Lucas Moura, and Spurs fans be damned, right? Because that's good money for Lucas Moura. We could turn that on better options in the squad.
I mean, that's an incredible amount of money. I'd sell him immediately. I'd consider 25 million. It's really, yeah, I'd sell him for 25 million easily.
I just want to make it clear, because people are going to be absolutely furious that we're having a conversation about selling Lucas, that this is a question that we were asked.
You picked it. You picked the question. Because of your anti-Lucas agenda.
I'm blaming Bardi for that one.
Wait, is this your question, Bardi?
I put that in there.
Okay, so r/coys, if you comment on the Lucas segment, please remember that it was Bardi's choice of question, all right?
Everybody's for sale. Everybody.
I mean, I think that is a healthy way to look at things, and especially when Newcastle have got bucket loads of money, you know, this is a great time to cash in on players that we don't see part of the future. And in Lucas's case, it's not that he doesn't fit the system, it's not that he's not good enough, maybe it is a little bit, but I think it's more that he's 29 and he's not going to be around for that much longer at the top level. So of course it would make sense to maximise it. I mean, it's the same conversations as I've just been having about Markande. It's a case of maximising value, isn't it? Voodoo Chopsticks, Dan says, lots of critique of our recruitment lately, but when most of our new recruits look good when they first come in, Højbjerg at the start, Bergvine and Ndombele scoring on the debuts, Giovanni Lo Celso carrying us in Project Restart, but then get steadily worse, are more likely problems, surely, our club environment. In the 2 years up till Conte, I can't think of a single player at the club getting better that isn't Kane or Son, really, and did they even get that much better? It's a good point.
I mean, I'm gonna challenge the Lo Celso bit. You can't throw in Lo Celso with that list, because he's looked fine. He hasn't looked good or next level like the others have. I do think there has been a little bit of improvement recently. I guess before Conte, it's hard, but we did go through some Mourinho and Nuno time, so it's difficult. But there has been an upturn in certain players. I do think when a new player comes in, there is that kind of rush to impress and everything else. And a lot of Bergwijn's goal that he scored on his debut was something that you just dream about. And it, it was never going, his career at Tottenham was never going to stay on that level. That's just a natural cause and effect. Bruno Fernandes has had a drop off recently as well. It's very difficult to keep having that impact once you've been in the team and people are aware of how you play and they can factor you into the defensive setup.
I strongly agree with the point that Dan's making, to be honest. I think our club environment has been a mess over the last 2.5 years, and I think that is the reason why our recruitment seems to be worse than it actually was. I think at the time, all of the signings made sense, and I think they would have been fine if the environment was better, to be honest. I really think there's been a timing issue with a lot of these signings, but I genuinely feel like whilst our recruitment is not the best, there's been a huge improvement in recent years.
Ish. I mean, we've never been a good club at signing players. I mean, in amongst there, you've got Jedson Fernandes, who's...
Oh, yeah, that's a disaster.
Someone that will be, yeah, that will be a quiz question in the future.
Gallini, similarly.
Yep. I think more of it is down to our recruitment, really. The squad, the structure of the squad and the managers and everything else have had a huge impact, but I think the recruitment has been pretty poor. Buying players that just don't work together. I don't know if we could ever see a midfield of Tanguy and Gio and then Schoenberg. I'm just not sure that would work.
Nathan, let's get stuck into your spreadsheet.
Okay.
Talk us through it.
Okay, so I sort of... The club and Conte have reportedly identified sort of four areas for concern, which is a backup to centre forward, who can also contend to start, a centre back, a right wing back, and a central midfielder. I've also put Andre Onana on there, though I think he's going to Inter. That's just a carry on because I copied it over from the one at the end of the last summer. The profile that I looked for centre forwards was I wanted to aim sort of somewhere between Kane and Son. The sort of two forwards. I appreciate we aren't playing a 3-5-2 at the moment, but we saw that sort of idea in mind. Obviously, Kane is something who profiles a bit like a number 10, but he's also a target in the box. He has really good hold-up play, really good chance creation. And then Son is sort of a fast player in behind who can play wide and is a good finisher. So if we were to have two players of any type of those, they probably wouldn't combine well together. So I've looked for players who are sort of either in between or, you know, even better, both. Which means that I've sort of prioritised athletic players, players who are sort of tall and fast, and therefore, because some of them are, you know, going to be on the cheaper end, some of them may have sort of technical deficiencies or tactical deficiencies or disciplinary deficiencies, because again, the priority is tall and fast. But some of the better options at the top of the end are tall, fast, technical, smart, creative, all of that.
So I've compiled my list of centre forwards. We've got sort of, I don't know, 15 or more names there. They're sort of vaguely ranked in order, but it's not a hard ranking. I haven't spent too much time thinking about which order of preference they are in. And I've also pretty much done my right wing backs now. I'm most of the way there. I don't know. There's a lot of names. Obviously, we don't have time to sort of spend 10 minutes talking about each and every one, but do you have specifics, names that are popping up to you or are interesting or whatever?
I found Scamacca being on the list quite interesting.
Okay.
He's a player that has started to look good, but Italy in a desperate need of a number nine. And he has in recent months started to feature and look like he could be that kind of player. I still think it's crazy that he's being linked with Juve at the moment. I still think he's a long way off that, but I wouldn't want him as a player to come in and replace Kane. I think he's definitely someone that would have to come in and learn the role. He's got, his physical attributes are just impressive. And but I don't think he would, I don't think he can lead the line at a big club yet.
Interesting. Well, I mean, yeah, as you say, his tools are really quite incredible, I think, and they always have been. He's now sort of putting that together in terms of his, like, his production. I mean, his expected goals per 90 last season at Genoa are actually really impressive, so maybe I want to take that back. But yeah, he is sort of, you know, a young player coming through. But yeah, strongly linked to Juve. I've put him way up the top of the list because I think that he is extremely well-rounded. Yeah, I accept that it's early days for him in terms of both his sort of his development and sort of proof of like ability to continue to produce over seasons. But I think that this is sort of, you know, a wonder kid basically, and that we should be right on it.
Yeah, I think for the price we could probably get him, I think he'd be well worth the gamble.
And the one that interests me, Nathan, is the guy at the top of the list, who's a player I've seen mentioned a lot on social media recently, Charles de Ketelaer. Is that how you pronounce it?
I think you pronounce the vowel on the end, but I'm not certain. Ketelaer, I'm not convinced of that. Yeah, how do you describe this player? Okay, so you take Harry Kane and you swap his worst and best attributes, right? So you lose Harry Kane's finishing, right? The sort of incredible ability to just score from any situation. You've lost that. But what you've got instead is he's now incredibly fast. So typically, domestically, he tends to play as more of sort of a number 10 or out wide or wherever, sort of more of a support role. Whereas in the Champions League, he's been playing as the 9. And from there, he can sort of make these runs over the top into sort of decoy positions. So he's been making sort of into out runs and then putting up incredible chances from there. Kane isn't the right starting place. Imagine if Kevin De Bruyne was really fucking fast. Imagine he was rapid and therefore also sometimes played as a number 9. That's just Ketelaer.
Interesting. Okay.
Patrick Schick is there, and I think that's a player. I could see reasons for not signing him is Bardi hates him.
Yeah.
He is an absolute log, and just because he smacked one in against Scotland doesn't make him a good player.
No. Okay, well, that's inflated his value. So he had a terrible time at Roma, yeah?
It was awful.
I would like to propose to you the concept that the player can be bad in one place and then go on to be good elsewhere. Right, and he's putting the goals away, man.
I saw him in the flesh when he played for Leipzig against us well, and he was an absolute lamppost. he's like... Scamacca can get around the pitch. I'm just not a Schick fan. But if he comes to Spurs, I'll be fully behind him.
Okay. Anyone else?
I like Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Yeah. I think he's expensive. But if Everton go down, there's a free.
Oh, if they go down, can you imagine how many teams would be interested in him? He's a really impressive player. Really, really impressive player. I think the good thing about Calvert-Lewin is... he's a very rounded player. He's kind of like, he's not the fastest, but he's not slow. He's not the best in the air, but he's really good. He's not that great in front of goal, but his finish numbers are fine. He's just kind of like good at everything. And he's also like a really decent character. Seems very, very popular in Everton. Would fit in like a hand in a glove, I think. He'd be a great signing. Just the right age as well. He's 24. And like I'm going to say, he's the most handsome player in the Premier League.
Scamacca would contest if he came in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I need to image search Scamacca as well.
Ask Callie who she prefers between the two.
Okay. Oh, I've seen Scamacca. Okay, when you said Callie, I was like, okay, now I know who he is. I saw an image went up on the Discord. I'm not into neck tattoos.
Okay.
I don't mind a sleeve. I don't even mind a chest, but I don't like the neck tattoo. Nah,
you need to get with the times, old man.
I am. I'm just hammering home how old I am in this episode, basically. But yeah, he's a handsome chap for sure. I mean, I'm pleased to see Edouard still remains on your list. I think he's very good. I was interested to see that Tony's on there despite the sort of lack of goals this season. He's clearly a good player. I think maybe the price that they would want for Tony is...
sure.
Over and above what he's actually worth at this point.
Sure.
Abraham, another interesting one. Really, really like Abraham. But again, he'd cost a lot of money, wouldn't he?
Yeah. I mean, a handful of these players, Edouard especially, I think, players who've just moved are sort of fairly unlikely to move again. But I don't think you should rule them out. I think that you should ask. You know, it's always worth asking.
And if you were like... I don't know. Let's say you were putting together the TIFO sensible transfers for Tottenham. Which of these would be the pick? Which would be like the affordable one that makes sense from a Spurs perspective?
Charles de Ketelaer. I think Scamacca again. Scamacca if he's available at the sort of price that we think he is, and he's not going to Juve. Who's affordable?
I mean, I can't believe Brulon Mbolo's still only 24. He's been around for a generation.
Yeah, well, he was sort of. he was kind of an athletic standout at youth level, and so was sort of promoted quite fast. And when he's promoted fast, he's sort of not quite at the technical and tactical level. But then he's caught up, and he's sort of rounded out those things now. And I don't know, he kind of looks like a winger playing up top, but on a good day. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Cool. So let's move on to the right wing backs. Talk us through it. I've got some questions, but let's, you know, same thing again, Nathan, if you wouldn't mind talking us through sort of some of the key names and why they're on there.
The profile for the right wing back is much more straightforward. Good wing back, basically. So someone who is either ideally both, again, at the top end of the table, who are both fast, good dribblers, and good like chance creation passing in the final third. I also wanted some sort of semblance of proof of like defensive ability, but I don't think that they I think you can have some defensive deficiency in a Conte wingback. So again, towards the bottom end of the list are players who there might be some question marks over in that department.
So pick number one is Nissem Ezraoui. He will be on a free in the summer and is linked to Barca. I would bid now and I would bid high. I think he is the best right back in the world. I think he's incredible. I mean, one thing with this is that, like, I thought Dest was very good when he was playing right back for Ajax, and now he's gone to Barca and things haven't gone that well for him. But I'm just so much more confident in Ezraoui. I think he's incredible. He just has everything. So, I mean, I guess there's an extent to which, like, he's probably slightly better as a fullback than a wingback because he is able to do all of the incredible attacking output stuff he does and also, you know, get all the way back and defend. And therefore, you're getting sort of more excellence per defensiveness, right? If that makes kind of sense. But like, he'd be excellent as a wingback too. So he's definitely my number one pick. His creativity from all positions, his tight space dribbling. I guess there could be very marginal questions about sort of athleticism for him. But he can create separation through technical ability. And the thing with saying like, oh, it's for Ajax is that like he's done that against good Champions League teams again and again. So yeah, he's my number one pick, and there are other good players there too.
I'd like to ask about Dwight McNeil because he's always struck me as a very, very old-fashioned winger who's probably not in the right era to be counted as a like a great player. But it's interesting you put him here as a right winger.
I was literally just watching him before while I was waiting for you to turn up on Wisecout. So he's left-footed. He plays left wing. He occasionally plays right wing. I've watched one game so far of him playing on the right, and he has been sort of cutting inside quite a bit. But I think that, I mean, essentially, if you play as a winger for Burnley, you're playing as a wing back for most of the clubs, right? That's the same role. So certainly from the left, he profiles just like a wing back, and he's a really good one. His delivery from the wing is really strong. Whether he would do that on the right, the benefit is obviously that Conte has shown a preference, and I did this in the recent YouTube video, for inverted wing backs, so we can't be too terrified of left footers. I just thought he was an interesting, because I looked through fullbacks and wing backs, and then I thought, okay, what about defensive wingers? What about, you know, what about signing Adama Traore, Victor Moses, whatever? And thinking that way, and he was just the first one who came to mind, and I thought, okay, yeah, he's a strong candidate. So I want to watch some more. In fact, I might sort of live stream in the Discord watching him play on the right for Burnley and see how much touchline presence he has. But he's just sort of an interesting outside shout.
I just want to highlight one more, and it's the Lyon player, Malo Gusto, which in Spanish translates as bad taste.
Yeah.
Bad taste at right wing back.
I don't have a huge amount to say about him at the moment. His numbers look really good. I haven't sort of done the rest yet. And also, he has a funny name, so.
Yeah, that works.
I was also going to pick out Dwight McNeil. I was intrigued to see him pop up on the right wing back list. Nathan now obviously obsessed with inverted wing backs. I think Dwight McNeil will have a position change throughout his career too, but I think he'll end up as a central midfielder.
I think that's a very interesting shout. I think that makes a lot of sense, to be honest.
I see him as a sort of James Milner type.
Sure.
You know, Milner started off as a young winger for Leeds, right winger, really impressive, and then very quickly moved inside because of his passing ability, his incredible work rate, and I think most importantly, his phenomenal tactical discipline. Just fulfilling the role meticulously and putting the team before himself. And I think Dwight McNeil is a perfect candidate for that. I think he'd work really, really nicely in a midfield three. And I think if Spurs were to sign him, which they definitely should consider because he's very good, I think we should consider playing him in a midfield three. And I think, you know, he'd have athleticism to get up and down the pitch in the same way that we expect Dele to. But also he's just got this incredible left foot, a really, really, really impressive passing range. And as I've mentioned, great work rate, great discipline tactically, great appreciation of the team shape.
I mean, I agree with all of that, to be honest.
So who would, again, if you're doing the kind of TIFO sensible transfers, who's the right wing pick that's kind of affordable, maybe a little under the radar, or is it just that you go for Mazraoui?
I'd definitely go for Mazraoui before anyone else. Baku is valued fairly highly. Lamptey's going to be expensive. I think they would say Dodo because he's sort of a non-top five league player. So he's at Shakhtar. He's very, very fast.
Okay. And he's an attacking wing back,
yeah,
I assume.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if he has, I wonder if he has sort of prior experience at wing back, but he's Brazilian, so they have a culture of very attacking wing backs, I guess. There's the obviously the strong Brazilian players to sort of Shakhtar pipeline, and he's a standout in that department. Obviously, you know, playing in the Ukrainian division, you know, there's a level of opposition question there. He does have Champions League minutes, so it's worth taking a look at them. But yes, he comes across as a bit of a TIFO suggestion.
Did you want to do centre-backs now, or would you rather keep your powder dry and do
I'm
that next
keep
week?
I'm going to keep my powder dry for them because I haven't done the hard hours on them yet.
So there you go, listeners. Something to look forward to in next week's podcast, some left-sided centre-back discussion. Question from Kino. When did you last boo and why?
I think I probably booed with the Nuno substitution. Was it Lucas?
It was Lucas.
Yeah, I think that was probably the first time I've ever booed. I just kind of got swept up in the moment. So everybody just got really upset and I was just like, I have some of that. I didn't boo Ndombele. I did tell him to hurry up and get off the pitch. But yeah, that was the only time I've ever booed. And it was, I helped sack Nuno. So I'm kind of grateful.
Good work,
for
that. Mate.
You should all be grateful to me. Yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
I got a man yeah. fired.
He's got a man lost his job because of you.
Exactly.
I don't think I've ever booed at the stadium. I would like to say that I would have booed Mourinho, but the reality is that were I going to Spurs regularly, I would simply have stopped going to Spurs regularly under Mourinho, so I wouldn't have had the opportunity to boo him anyway.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever booed Spurs. I boo the opposition all the time, every sub they make.
And the referee.
Every time the manager gets out of his seat, when they come out to warm up. I don't think I've ever booed Spurs.
I bet you two have booed a band before. I can just imagine.
No, as a musician, what? I like, you know, I always have sympathy for being up on stage, even if you're terrible. And I have seen some fucking terrible bands. Even then, I'm like, you know, fair play to you, you're getting up there. And I, yeah.
Then Windy, definitely, when he was going through his Britpop stage in the mid to late 90s, you definitely booed somebody.
So I would have booed bad behaviour, I think, but I don't know if I ever. So I saw the Libertines pre and post Pete Doherty, and he was a dickhead. He was an absolute dickhead in the gig that I saw him. But I think I found it exciting at the time. I found his bad behaviour sort of intoxicating during that time period because I was a naive young person. Uh-huh. And it didn't bother me that I was like not getting value for money because he was being a prick. I just thought it was funny. So I don't think I have ever booed a band, Bardi. Have you?
No.
You didn't boo David Gray all those times you went to see him?
I've never been to see David Gray.
You love a bit of David Gray.
I do. When my car got stolen, so I'd parked my car in my neighbour's drive, and they had got through my dad's. This was many, many years ago. They got through my dad's post box with a fishing rod, and we reckon they were after my dad's Audi because the police were like, "Why would they steal an Alpha 147?" And they with the fishing rod, they went through. They hooked the key, took it, and they took the car away. Joyride, smashed it all up. And they destroyed everything apart from my David Gray CD. That remained intact and I was able to continue to use it.
It's a beautiful tale.
I heckled Limp Bizkit and got beer thrown at my mates.
Why did you heckle them?
Because I think they're ridiculous. I think they're an absurd act. They were at a festival that I went to, and so I was just like, what's the front man's name again? I can't remember. I was just
Fred Durst.
I was just yelling back to the nonsense that Fred Durst was saying, and then some people who were, you know, defensive of Limp Bizkit were moved to throw their beers in our direction, and then it didn't hit me, it hit my friends behind me.
And he was just saying, I don't know why you want to hate me. Jamie T.
Boo! Oh.
Yeah, I deserved. Jamie T says, what has been your worst excuse to get out of something you didn't want to do? This is obviously based upon Arsenal getting out of the North London Derby. Bardi, I bet you've got some belters for this.
No, I'm kind of one of these guys that if I put my name up to do something, I'll get it done. I may not do it properly. I may not do it with the full gusto that I should, but I get it done. I did get out of running the marathon because Spurs qualified for the Champions League final, which is probably a pretty lame excuse, but it was the same day as it, and I'd rather go to Madrid to watch Tottenham lose. So that's probably the only thing I've kind of got myself out of. Otherwise, I'll just get through it. Just got to do it.
How about you, Nathan?
Yeah, I'm the opposite in terms of, like, I won't bother inventing an excuse. Like, I'd be like, I can't. Mm. Yeah. I think people like put it upon themselves to come up with a plausible story, and they just put themselves in the worst position. Whereas if you're like, I'm sorry, I can't, people won't be like, oh, why? What are you doing? And if they are like that, then you don't want them in your lives.
Absolutely. I was going to say something similar. I remember, and again, this is a time, it feels like years ago because it's pre-COVID, but like when I realized that you don't have to go to things that you'd booked, I found it such an exhilarating discovery. Like sometimes you'd book tickets to a show or a gig or I'd go and see comedians quite frequently, and then like on the day you'd be like, I just don't really fancy that, and the realization that, oh, I don't actually have to go, it's my choice whether I go or not. I book tickets, but I don't have to attend. Oh god, it was the best. So yeah, just don't turn up, it's fine.
I also, you guys know me now, I also have the tendency to over-elaborate or go into too much information. Yeah. And if I start lying, I just start creating a wormhole of a whole parallel universe of strings of lies. I just can't do it. I over-explain anyway too much. I'm in a restaurant and my wife will just stand and look at me as I explain everything to the waitress about why I'm not going to order something off the menu. And she, yeah, it's kind of me.
I like this one from Jam Scones. It's not often I say that. How much do you guys let football take over your weekend? I can understand if you're going to the match, it takes up a lot more, but I've found as I'm getting older that it's less and less. But is that different considering it's work for you three? Cup games don't count. We all know Nathan stepped through Morecambe.
For fuck's sake. yeah, I mean, it's not just the time the game is on for me, because I do the team sheet and then I watch the game and then I will go over some statistics afterwards and then I'll sort of think about the shape and then I might rewatch some bits and yeah, it takes up a lot.
Yeah, it takes up a lot of my time. I have found though since we launched the Patreon and we do this and serious podcasting these days, I can use that whole, oh, I need to watch this for the podcast.
Yeah. Yes.
It's my job. So I do use that card a little bit more. But I've said many times, it's a privilege being able to go watch Tottenham. So it takes up time of my life, but it's time that I factor into my life and try and work things around. To last weekend, for example, was a prime. I should have been at Tottenham and I should have lost 7, 8, 9 hours of my life. But instead, I decided to use it to go for a nice long walk, go for dinner, do some stuff with my wife. And at least for those times that football aren't in the way, to make the most use of it. So, which is kind of why I just didn't watch any football this weekend. Just focused it on house stuff.
My girlfriend is in the background laughing at your comments about I have the excuse of, well, it's my job, I have to watch it.
I would say, it's interesting. During COVID, I essentially have done nothing. I haven't left the house other than to see my girlfriend and the occasional trip to my parents. And so football is massive. It's like hugely important to me at the moment. And Spurs in particular are hugely important. And I actually really felt disappointed when the North London Derby was postponed, because it was like the thing that my weekend was built around. It was like the event that I had to look forward to. So yeah, I absolutely do let it take over my weekend, which in some ways can be damaging because, as we've seen over the last 2 years, watching Spurs is not always a fun experience. And so when you're kind of the enjoyment of your weekend is pinned upon that, it becomes even more of a frustration. I also enjoy watching non-Spurs games. So like I will typically watch two or three matches every weekend. That's quite normal for me nowadays. So I guess I do let it take over. If I'm completely honest, it does. Football rules my life.
There's a thing where it's like, because I like, I'm sort of constantly sort of churning out the content and changing my ideas and stuff. It's like games really interrupt my making of videos. And sometimes it's like, oh, here's an idea. And I'll sort of like start to put the things together in my notes and clips and stuff. And then the next game will completely change that and flip that. And I have to scrap stuff. And then with this one, it was like, oh, good. The game isn't on Sunday. I have more time to work on my spreadsheets, right, about Tottenham. So the less games there are, as much as it's, you know, it's good for the players, right? People are going to clip that bit, aren't they?
I just can't go over it. I have more time to work on my spreadsheet. That's brilliant.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at @DavyShambles and his SoundCloud, E. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.